This is Marcos again. This is my third interview at the Xorg Developers Conference with Ian Romanek. He works on Mesa.
So this is the third interview at X. Is this XDS or XDC?
You know, I think people are starting to just call it ZorgConf.
ZorgConf.
Okay,
so we're at ZorgConf 2011. I'm here with Ian Romanoff.
Romanek.
Dang it.
Okay.
So, and I guess... All right, so who are you? Tell us a little bit about yourself, how you found X, what you work on, a little brief intro.
So, I'm Ian Romanek. I've been working on X-related things since, I want to say, 2002. I originally got into Mesa development back when I was working at IBM in the Linux Technology Center there, where we had sort of this... Back in those very heady early days, we had this sort of nebulous goal of make Linux better. And so one of the big problems that we encountered was graphics, and in particular 3D on Linux, was a disaster. So I had sort of open rein to just jump in and work on stuff wherever things were bad to try to make things better. So I spent a lot of time working on new features and trying to fix bugs in existing drivers and just get involved and improve the state of things. And so that's what I did there for quite a long time before moving over to Intel 3 years ago, and where I've been working on the various drivers for the Intel integrated graphics chipsets, primarily still in Mesa. And now I'm the architect of our 3D driver for those parts.
Okay. So what is Mesa? I was talking about that a little bit before, but it's, what is it?
So technically speaking, Mesa is an implementation of an OpenGL-like programming interface, and we have to call it that for trademark reasons.
You can't call it... You can't just call it OpenGL or something like that?
We can't call it OpenGL because it's never passed the conformance tests or and no one's paid the licensing fees.
Okay. So call it Mesa instead?
We'll call it Mesa.
All right. So it's a software programmer writes against the OpenGL API anyway, and anything that the cart doesn't hardware accelerate, it falls back to Mesa? Is that how that works? Or?
Well, so basically Mesa converts the things that the application calls, tracks state and sends commands to the driver, which then either sends commands to the hardware, or if it's trying to do something that the hardware can't do, will fall back to doing rendering in software. But hopefully you never have to fall back to rendering in software, because that's super, super slow.
Okay. So how much of an average application now is hardware accelerated versus using Mesa versus...
Well, so it's all using Mesa, right? I mean, it all goes through Mesa, and because the driver lives inside of Mesa, it's part of it.
Oh,
yeah.
So how? This part of X I'm not familiar with at all. So Mesa is just the overall. So the OpenGL accelerated, the hardware accelerated stuff is inside of Mesa, or it's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's a lot of device specific code that's inside of Mesa. And so when you build the DRI drivers, which DRI is the direct rendering infrastructure, that's the interfaces that we use in X to arbitrate access to the hardware. When you build one of these DRI drivers, you build the blob of device specific code for whatever driver you are, and then all of the state and data tracking code that's part of what we call core Mesa, which is just the device independent parts of it, the stuff that handles sort of taking care of things that are just part of the API and that aren't really specific to a piece of hardware.
Okay. How does libDRM and DRM tie into all that?
So libDRM. So DRM, which is the direct rendering manager, is the kernel portion of this. So when you set up all these commands, and need to submit them off to the hardware. Well, we can't just have anyone banging on the hardware. That would be all kinds of security holes. So we have to have the kernel do that for us. So we submit buffers containing commands to the kernel. Most of the kernel modules for the different drivers will then look at those command buffers and make sure that you're not doing trying to do something hinky, and then we'll send the commands off to the hardware. And then most hardware works where it, after it's completed commands or has done different things, it will generate interrupts, and the kernel module will handle that part of it.
Okay.
Then libdrm is a set of wrappers on top of the raw kernel interfaces. So at least for the Intel driver, and I believe most of the other drivers work like this, both the 3D driver and the 2D driver link with libdrm to send, so they can send in commands to the kernel. And that's especially true in when you have KMS to do to kernel mode setting.
Okay. All right. And that allows, so you don't have that flicker when you start up, right, where it goes from text mode to GUI?
Well, so, I mean, the big advantage of KMS is that it pulls a bunch of code out of the user mode driver, so we can do a bunch of different kinds of arbitration of things, and we can do page flipping and different kinds of memory allocation, and it's one of those things that has it's death by a thousand cuts, or you know, life by a thousand, I'm not sure what. It has a whole bunch of little benefits that all pile up to be extremely useful.
Okay, so it's not just the GUI text mode.
Right, right. Okay. That's kind of the icing on the cake.
Oh, okay. So we have DRM and DRI, and all this is, all that is within Mesa itself? Mesa's overall?
Well, so, yeah, there's a lot of the DRI stuff is in Mesa. A lot of it also lives in the X server. Part of DRI itself is when you try to run a 3D application, it needs to arbitrate some access to the hardware and some permissions and some buffer management that it has to coordinate with the X server. And DRI defines that protocol between the client and the X server. So that, for example, when you want to get the buffer so that you can do 3D rendering to a window, some communication happens with the X server. When you want to, after you're done rendering to the off-screen buffer and you want to flip to make that visible, there's some protocol that happens with the X server to make that buffer swap happen.
Okay.
And a bunch of that protocol changed and got revised and changed around when compositors started becoming more common, and we had to revamp it quite a lot, and that's what ended up becoming DRI2. Because
okay.
The old way that we did it was, let's do a quick hack to get some stuff working so that we can actually have 3D, and then you know we lived with that for 5 or 6 years, and then finally said, this quick hack needs to die. We need to do it right.
And that's what DRI2 is.
And that's, yeah, DRI2.
Okay. So when you draw, so the 3D, Mesa, is it used for 2D stuff as well, or just 3D?
No, just for 3D. Oh,
okay, so if you're trying to accelerate like a normal window on a screen, like a normal application, does that get used? Does that do any kind of hardware acceleration?
Yeah, there's acceleration for render, but all of that lives in the 2D driver.
Oh, okay. So that's
there are various people who have big dreams of being able to make that live on top, have a generic set of render acceleration that can live on top of OpenGL. But there's some limitations of how 3D hardware works that make that challenging.
Was it the EGL stuff that lived way several years ago?
Yeah, so EGL is kind of an orthogonal issue. This was the stuff, it's had a couple names. I think the name of the most recent project trying to do that is, I want to say Glamour, I believe is the most recent project to try to do 2D acceleration on top of OpenGL.
So, but for the most part, it sounds like the 2D stuff, the regular, like the windows and the buttons and all that stuff, that's not really hardware accelerated?
No, it is. It just goes through a completely different channel to do it.
Oh, okay.
That's what the X Render extension is.
Oh, okay. All right. So X-Render, I thought X-Render was going away, or did I miss? Am I missing? Misunderstanding. There's a lot I don't understand here.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's going away just like X is going away. People say, oh, it's going to go away in a couple of years, and they've been saying that forever.
Okay. So it's not like Wayland's going to, well, maybe that's a separate topic, but that's the future. It's not here yet. You've still got all these.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. All right. So part of my thing is I'm trying to get people to come into X and Mesa being part of that. I mean, how can people get involved in Mesa? I mean, is it basically the learning curve like a vertical wall, like a cliff they got to climb up, or is there anything they can do to help? Is there?
So the way that most people end up getting involved, and I think actually the way that I got involved too is, find some particular thing in that piece of software, and I think this applies to most, getting involved with most pieces of open source software. Find one particular thing that it either doesn't do or that it doesn't do right, and start asking questions and looking at the code and trying to figure out either why it doesn't do it right or what it would take to make it do the thing that you want. And just start pulling at that one little thread. And one of two things happens. You get frustrated and go away, because it turns out that it's a hard problem or a hard project or whatever that you don't have the time or inclination or whatever to do. Or you start to learn about the project and get involved with it and you know, gradually, you know, you pull up that thread long enough and you completely unravel the whole sweater, and then you realize that you have 1,000 patches submitted in that project and you're one of the core developers. Right. When it feels like 6 months ago you didn't know anything about it.
So this is to be expected. You start out, you have no idea what's going on, you're basically in the dark.
Oh yeah.
Alright.
Oh yeah. That's, as far as I know, that's the way pretty much, I'll go out on a limb and I'll say that's how every single active developer on Mesa got involved. Is something, there was either some piece of functionality that they wanted that was missing, or something that was there but that didn't work right for some particular scenario, and they just started, you know, trying to figure out why and asking people questions and looking at source code and, you know, tracing through things and, you know, looking at how data or execution flows through the code base for that one particular micro feature that they cared about. And, you know, eventually they just learned enough to be able to accomplish that one small thing, and then, you know, at that point most people are hooked.
So there's still, because you've been doing Mesa a while then, is there still like little threads that you don't fully understand now these days? Are you pretty?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a giant code base. I mean, there's, so a few weeks ago, we removed support for a bunch of deprecated old drivers and gutted out, I think, 127,000 lines of code.
Damn.
And there's still 500,000 lines of code left. I mean, it's a big piece of software. So yeah, there's a lot of it. A lot of code in there I've never seen and have no clue how it works.
But you're still one of the main guys when it comes to Mesa.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm one of the people that most people go to with questions. Like, how does this part work? And a lot of times I know, sometimes I don't know, but in those cases I will almost always know who to ask.
Okay. So then you'd be good to ask this. So is there anything that's happened recently or will happen very shortly in Mesa that people will start seeing, like 6 months, the next distros come out, or anything you think is really cool? 127,000 lines of gone code is pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, unless you happen to have one of those, you know, 8-year-old pieces of graphics hardware.
Matrox 2.
Yeah. Yeah. If you have a G200, you may be sad. But if you have a G200 and you're trying to run modern 3D applications on it, you're already sad. Well, so like we presented earlier today at the conference, we're my team and other people in the community are working full steam ahead towards OpenGL 3.0. Mm. So that will be exciting when that finally
ends. I think on that slide, I think I saw 8 total things that were still missing. I know those, some of those things were underneath the covers, huge, but
yeah. So there's 8. I think there's like 8 primary feature groups that still remain to be done, and a couple of those. So there was one of the items that when we went through and figured out what it was going to take to implement it, it was like 5 person months worth of work. So
wow, so 8 yeah. things seems like a
yeah.
short list.
Well, so one of them was like 5 person months, and one of the other things on that list, I think we figured was 2 weeks. So but there's some variation in the size.
So you kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel when 3.0 will be.
Yeah, I think we're gonna. You know, I'm always reluctant to say anything about dates, because
I'm not asking for one.
Well, because it's software.
Yeah.
it's how it goes. But yeah, we're getting close. I think we're gonna have it.
Very cool. So if you're working on 3.0, does that mean like 2.0 and 2.1 are done, or are they basically separate? Questions.
Yeah, I mean we've supported 2.1 for quite some time. So the way that Mesa numbers its releases, the major number roughly corresponds to some GL version. So the entire Mesa 7.x has been OpenGL 2.1.
Oh, okay.
And 6.x was OpenGL 2.0, and 5 was OpenGL 1.5, and
okay,
et cetera, et cetera.
So this is Mesa 8 then, 8.x?
So it will be 8.0 when we have 3.0 support, assuming that we keep that numbering scheme, and I don't see any particular reason to change.
Okay. So I have to ask about OpenGL 4. Is it a... What's the story with it? Not that I'm pushing, because I'm happy that 3.0 is coming.
You know, someday.
Okay.
it's definitely a goal, but there's a lot of work to be done before that.
How many of you are working on Mesa?
So right now, my team at Intel is 6 people who are mostly full-time working on Mesa.
Okay. Do you know about, like, does AMD/ATI have people working on it?
Yeah, so AMD has, I want to say, 2 guys, and then they had an intern over the summer who had been previously involved with the Mesa project, and they decided to give him money over the summer to keep doing the same work. And then who else did you ask about?
Just anyone in general, because I know Intel, you said that. I was just wondering, what's the overall...
So primarily, corporate-wise, there's Intel and AMD. Red Hat has a couple people who do a bunch of stuff for Mesa. And then VMware has a number of people. I don't know how many people they have. All of their people were previously... the Tungsten Graphics people. And
oh, exactly.
They got acquired.
Russell,
yeah, Zach, and then Brian Paul, who is the guy who started the Mesa project as a project at college. Keith Whitwell, I'm totally blanking on names. Jacob Borenkranz, I'm blanking on names. They have a bunch of people who do various amounts of open source and closed source work related to Mesa and a bunch of their projects.
Okay. Sorry. But it's about 10 to 15, and I'm not hard numbers.
I think maybe closer to 8 or 10 total.
Okay. Cool. So 3.0 will happen.
Yeah. Although it seems like it's mostly us and the AMD guys and one of the guys at Red Hat who are really pushing to get to it.
Yeah.
We're certainly the most enthusiastic about it. But we'll have a big popcorn party when it's done.
very cool. All right, so I got the same list I was asking the other guys about. I ask you if people can get involved. I'm assuming you're always looking for people to try to help. I know it's not the easiest thing to get in, but...
Yeah, I mean, you know, over the last year, we've had three or four new people come to the project who've kind of gone about the process that I described before. They had one particular thing they were interested in, and they just started pulling at that thread, and now they're trapped.
Very cool. All right.
Well, hopefully we can get some. Hopefully this podcast to the listeners will get some more people to come help you guys out.
That'd be cool.
Anything else you want to say? Mention? Chat? I don't know how many people actually listen to my podcast, but at least two. You know, I have a couple of friends who will listen.
Yeah, just if you're interested, you know, come read the mailing list, hang out on the IRC channel.
Is that Mace at what, Freenode.net? What,
Freenode.net, I believe, I want to say, it's actually #DRIDevel,
okay.
I think.
DRI-Devel?
Yeah.
Okay.
I believe that's correct.
Very cool. Well, all right. Thank you for your time, Ian.
Yeah.
The conference is now over, so I'm guessing it's beer time or whatever.
Yes, it is.
All right. Well, cool. Thanks again.
Thanks.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HBR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All Binrev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.